Good morning. I think that song was a test that Dave was seeing if I can run out of my breath completely and whether that will shorten the sermon or not. And so I get the picture and okie dokie. Oh, as always, it's good to see you, and especially now it seems like we're having a bout of illness that is running through the congregation that's really affecting us. And so for all those that are at home, we are sorry for your illness and hope that you've tuned in and know that you're missed. This morning, as we talk, I want to make you aware that I've had a conversation outside our congregation and any of that that has to do with women and their roles in the church and a number of things along those lines. And it has caused me to think heavily about some of the stuff that I have believed and do believe and that sort of thing. And so as I consider some of the things that have been said to me, it has generated within me the need to speak on some things. And so this passage, 1 Timothy 2, I'm not going to bother to read it again. It's up there for you to read if you'd like to read it. Is one of the identifiers in the New Testament anyway of roles and what women can and cannot do. And I want us to recognize that their sense of propriety and modesty with proper clothing and the braiding of hair, okay, and gold and pearls and all those costly garments and things like that are to be set aside for the person you are. And that we're to let that be the case, and that's the case. And then, of course, that women are to receive instruction with submissiveness, and that is as their nature would be. And I want to recognize that it is not in the nature of every woman to be that way, that they're not submissive necessarily because they want to. They are because God said so. And we need to recognize that. And then the explanation, of course, that Adam was formed first, and it was, but he was not deceived, and that Eve was deceived. And so consequently, some of this is all based on things that no woman is guilty of. Okay, that it was Eve that was guilty, and it caused some of what goes on. And yet, as we know, with the number of babies we have in our congregation, that women are to continue in faith and love and sanctity with self-restraint and are preserved by childbearing, and I believe in a very real sense, in the bearing of Jesus Christ. And so, that's the case. But, I think that as things happen, as we study passages, as we understand things and come to conclusion, and we hold that for a while without revisiting it again, many times we hold things and we take them further than they are meant to be. And so I think that there is a place that we, meaning men, have placed women below me somehow, of which I don't believe that a woman's role is lesser than men's. I believe it's different than men. And consequently, in our haste to speak what the Lord says, many times we add something God didn't say. And when I make that statement, I make the statement because there are those who think that all women are to be in subjection to all men somehow, and that is not the case. They are to be deferential at a certain time and place and some of those things. And so, we're careful to mention that it's a woman's role many times in this, but then we couch that in a sense of male superiority, which I'm not real sure that we should call it superiority. Then we reduce women to a position of only support roles and suggesting that they have no authority for leadership, and I'm not sure that that's really the case either, that God has granted by the power of the gospel, the ability to speak and to teach and thus lead in many ways. So, my direction is today is to appreciate the roles, and I say that as plural for a reason, that women play and the honor that they should receive and that in some things, and then we'll have some other discussions later, that we recognize that the passage is offering responsibility. There are those that do that, and there are also passages that offer limitation. And that is for both men and women. There are men, there's a time that we speak and a time to be silent, and we need to know that. Men are as much under restraint as they are under authorization to act. We are to be careful with the things we say and do, and so it goes with women as well. And so this morning I want to use a number of women, and I'm going to begin with Esther, that have affected things in God's plan in the bringing about the Christ and setting an example, if you will. And so we know about Esther that when God's people are threatened by an accuser, Haman, and he is wanting to have them essentially executed and purge them from the society, that when that was going on, that she is convinced she must do something about that. And so I want you to take for a moment understanding the story. Here we have a man that intends to wipe out our people, God's people, and I am queen and have the ability to influence that. Should I? Now I want to tell you that if I was going to ask, is that leadership? That's leadership. If you answer the question, yes, I should do what I could do to stop this. And she does, okay? And so, consequently, that's what goes on. Does she have the right to act, okay, for God when a man is not in the position to be able to do it? And in this case, she did. And I'm just asking you to think about it that way, okay? And then a man who does not respect God intends to hurt God's people. And so she has an enemy, if you will, based on the fact that an ungodly man is her enemy and that he has plans to hurt those that are the people of God, and she intends to do something about that. So she implements a 3-day fast and then goes into the king to identify the accuser of her people, and she stops his agenda cold. And what he intended for them ended up being for him. The gallows that he had put up to kill his enemy ended up being the gallows that hung him. And so, as a result of winning, he doesn't win against God's people. Haman loses completely in Esther 4 and 5. Okay, so now then, I have a question about this as I do it. Could you agree that she is a female shadow of Jesus? Now, you know, we make that comparison all the time with men. We have Moses, who is a foreshadower and something like unto the Christ that will come. And we have a number of men that act in that kind of way. Is Esther one of those? Because I want you to see, as an antitype, she foreshadows the ultimate victory of God's people that they had over their accuser and the ultimate deliverer of Jesus. And am I stretching things to make that happen? You might think so, but I think that it's a direct correlation. Esther is not backwards, ignorant, a worthless decoration for the men of the story. She's the heroine of the story. She is the one that makes it happen. She's a deliverer. And so, I want to give honor to that idea. I want you to think about Rahab for a minute. Now, I've got Rahab, and I'm going to talk about the book of Ruth in just a second. That Ruth, these are foreign women. Now, as a foreign woman, what place do they have in the line of the Jews or of Israel in any case? And they have no line. They have no ability for rights, if you want to call it that, other than what is given by kindness, that we won't treat a stranger in our land the way we were treated in Egypt, and that was told to them by God, but these are foreign women. In Joshua 2, they go in to spy out Jericho, and Rahab recognizes who they are and what they're doing. Now, why would you help your enemy? And I'm going to tell you that the reason that she is mentioned and always mentioned is because she believed that God is God and that this God is a true God versus the gods that we have can't do anything to stop God, the God of the Israelites. She understands what's getting ready to happen, and if they've decided to take Jericho, we're going to be taken. And so can I save my family? And so she helps them because she needs to. She recognizes the feeling even inside of Jericho was fear. If these people are going to come against us, they have the God of heaven who has parted the Red Sea and escaped from the Egyptians and destroyed their army and done all the good things that they've done, and now they're coming here. What are we going to do? There were options other than fight, but they decided to fight, okay. But she helps them, and she is granted salvation for not only herself, but her family, because of the things that she did. And she is remembered because of it. Ruth also, she is a Moabite. And since we've been studying the divided kingdom lately, we realize just how the Ammonites and the Moabites are the dreaded foe, if you want to call it, from God's sake. Because they would not come out and feed you or help you or do anything for you. I remember that, and I am going to destroy them because of it. And so here she is, a Moabite from the really opposite end of the world compared to the thinking of the Israelites. And she is going to follow her Jewish mother-in-law Naomi. And we're all aware of Ruth 1, 16 and 17. Where you go, I will go, and I will follow you. And your God will be my God, and I will be with you for the rest of my life. That's who I'm going to be. What? How wonderful is that? But there's a passage that you may not have noticed, because I don't read genealogies all the time, carefully. And so here it says, Salmon was the father of Boaz by Rahab. Boaz was the father of Obed by Ruth. And Obed is the father of Jesse. And Jesse is the father of David. That she, as a foreign woman, because of her actions and by the providence of God, comes into the lineage of Jesus because of a faith that is real, and it doesn't matter where she came from. And look at what she was able to accomplish. She helps in the lineage of Jesus himself. And so, does God then, through his providence, provide for the lineage of Jesus? Yes. Would anyone deny that God's hand is in it when you're in that lineage? I don't think so. Okay, and so that this woman then is blessed due to her wisdom in following God. Both of the women are blessed because of their submission to God. Okay, and then I want to ask the question, if that's the case, if foreign women and foreigners could be that kind of faithful and they get blessed in these ways, how much more the children of God? What could have Israel really been if they would have just followed God? And I ask the very same question of us today. Okay, so these women are not worthless. They're submissive to the point of obscurity in a certain way, but honored by God for their faith and actions. And so I give you the two of them. Then there's Abigail. Now, Abigail is in 1 Samuel, the 25th chapter, she's going to turn the wrath of David away over her husband Nabal. And when we think about that story, David has offered protection to Nabal and his herds and herdsmen and all those kinds of things. And now he's hungry and he asks for some food, and Nabal says, "Who are you? You have no title and I owe you nothing. I don't know what in taxes. I don't know what in anything. I don't even know. And so get off my land, basically. Abigail, recognizing who David is, and I am torn about this aspect. I've never been able to figure out how women think, so just let me just say that in the first place. Is it that she fears what he will do, that David will do, because he is a warrior and that he can destroy anything? He can destroy us completely. Is it a fear factor? Or is it that he is the anointed of God and that because he is who he is in position with God and I'm in that same position with God, that she would save him or deal with him honorably? So she overrides her husband's decision, which we understand that's no easy thing to do sometimes. Okay. And she does it to save his life, Nabal's life. Okay. And her manner during that occurrence and how she does this and bringing the food and prostrating herself and blaming herself for what has happened appeals to David, and David's wrath turns away. And he recognizes that her words are correct. And he yields on what he was about to do, which was to destroy Nabal and all that he had. And then, of course, Nabal dies very quickly after this, and he marries her for her dedication to God. I never see anything that makes me think that David loves her. I think he married her to take care of her. And I may be wrong, I don't know. But this is a woman that accomplished much. And so as we leave that story, I have another one. This is about the wise woman at Abel. Abel is a city. All right, so let me just read this to you. They came and besieged him in Abel, Beth Maacah, and they cast up a siege ramp against the city and stood by the rampart, and all the people who were with Joab were wreaking destruction in order to topple the wall. Then a wise woman called from the city, "Hear, hear, please tell Joab, come here that I may speak with you." And so he approached her, and the woman said, "Are you Joab?" And he said, "I am." Then she said to him, "Listen to the words of your maidservant." And he answered, "I am listening." Then she spoke, "Formerly, they used to say, they will surely ask advice at Abel, and thus they ended dispute. I am of those people, of those who are peaceable and faithful in Israel. You are seeking to destroy a city, even a mother in Israel. Why would you swallow up the inheritance of the Lord?" And Joab replied, far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. Such is not the case, but a man from the hill country of Ephraim, Sheba, the son of Bichri, by name, has lifted up his hand against King David. Only hand him over, and I will depart from the city." And the woman said to Joab, "Behold, his head will be thrown to you over the wall." Then the woman wisely came to all the people, and they cut off the head of Sheba, the son of Bichri, and threw it to Joab. And so he blew the trumpet, and they were dispersed from the city, each to his tent. And Joab also returned to the king at Jerusalem. Now, when it comes to leadership and some things along those lines, this one is pretty hard to deny. Okay, that here she is, and she doesn't know what's going on at the time. Why are we being attacked? And so she goes and asks Joab directly, "Get your leader and bring him over here so that I can talk to him." Okay. She not only, she hears, she understands, she judges, and she acts for the city. Now then, that causes us to ask some questions. Does she already have such position that she can rule or make statements as if she's the mayor of the city? Can she do that? Okay, because of reputation or whatever it may be, we don't know. Is she of the official capacity that she can have, has the right as the leader of the city to make decisions for the city? And I'm going to tell you, by the way Old Testament is set up, women are rarely in that case, if that is the case. Is it also, is it capable that she's known to be a wise woman, that her sense of judgment is such that she has guided people again and again and again, and even in the government, helped them to make good decisions that make this city safe and secure rather than letting poor decision making go on? And she says she is from that group that made good decisions, that think reasonably, etc. And so she asks the questions. She understands. She judges that okay, we've allowed someone in here and given, and we are harboring someone that we should not be harboring. And so we're not going to lose the city over to this guy. And so I think this is a little harsh. We'll bring you his head and we'll throw it down to you in just a little bit. Now then she's got to go back into the city and say, go find this Sheba, go find that man, bring him here, cut his head off, and somebody is going to do the very thing she said do. Now, throw it to them so that they can leave. She sways the entire city, and she saves the city by doing so. So now then, since we're men and we look at things correctly, do we understand that there have been women that have power by ability and trust in God and, in this case, audacity to do hard things? So this is one that women can be the source of action in a tough situation. So then let's move to Deborah. Deborah is one of the judges of Israel. And according to Judges 4:4, Deborah was a prophetess and a judge in Israel. So Barak, who is the leader of the military, doesn't want to make decisions. Evidently, he's not much of a politician and doesn't want to judge what's right and wrong and do those things. I follow orders. I need someone to lead me. And he goes to Deborah to be the one to do it. And so she ends up being a deliverer, but Barak can't seem to handle the pressure. Deborah had to go to him, or go with him, to go deal with some issues. And it's war. We're talking about battle. In Judges 4:9, Barak will receive no glory for the conquering of their enemy at this time. And Sisera, which is the one that they are fighting, okay, is going to be delivered. It says, and she says this, God said, is going to be delivered, taken care of, in other words, by a woman. And so it is Deborah who encourages Zebulun and Naphtali to fight, knowing that God is with you and has given them into your hands. Let's go. And now Barak is the leader, but it is Deborah that is the one that does the talking here. Now, the end of this story is Jael, who they defeat Sisera and all of his men, and they rout them completely. He runs away, and as he's going by, Jael lures Sisera into the tent and says, "Hide here. I'll help you. Here, have something to drink." And he falls asleep, and she puts a tent stake to his temple and drives it through his skull. Ouch! Okay. So, when I make that point, though, she takes care of him. God's word becomes true. And it says in Judges 5:24 that she, Jael, was honored as the most blessed of women for what she had done. I want to tell you that the strength of women is far surpasses what we think sometimes. And we need to remember that as well. And then I want you to consider the proverbial woman. That it says, an excellent wife, who can find, she is far more precious than jewels. And anyone with any sense knows that that is a true statement. And so as it describes her, She provides, this is from Proverbs 31. She provides for her household. She works real estate. She has wisdom buying and selling. She prepares for trouble. She runs her home smoothly. Her husband is known by her support. And her children bless her. Her husband praises her. And she is known in the city and praised as blessed. Now, that's a lot. That's a lot of reputation. And deservedly, based on the things that we're reading. And so, when I come to think about things, we should learn something. The wise women tuck godly wisdom into the words they speak, and even more in the words they choose not to speak. I have always wondered why it is said that a woman can teach a man without a word. I think that that takes a man that is looking for lessons. I hope so. But that she knows how, the manner of getting a point across. And so women perceive differently, they think differently, they reason differently, they communicate differently than men. I believe that they are more intuitive than men, okay, and that men tend them to be more logical and compartmentalized. But I think that women see on a greater level. They see a bigger picture than we see many times, because we're focused on goals and those types of things, and they see in a broader sense. I think that that is the case of things, and that. But then I would ask you the question: how logical is it for Abigail to help a renegade rather than follow her husband's advice of following the king? And while that story works out perfectly, I want you to see, she sees a picture that is bigger than Nabal. So that we must respect the differences and understand our need to hear women's views. Wisdom is identified as a woman in Proverbs when it says that wisdom shouts in the street and she lifts her voice in the square. And I think that much of that has to do with the fact because they choose the time to speak better than we do. I'm a blurt out guy. I need to stop it, you know. I need to learn to be a better man and be wiser with the when of things. And so I think that what I gain is that we should listen first, and as husbands, that we would then learn, okay, and then make decisions that both of us can say amen to. And then when I take that, and if I can learn that at home, if I could learn to be that person, then when I come into a group, it would be the same way, that we're gonna speak first, and I'm going to listen. And then once I've heard, then we're going to make suggestions that we can all say amen to. I think it makes great sense. So, as you can see, that's what provides that statement. The key is, do we turn to those of wisdom when we need to? And I want you to see that the woman at Abel is a city that turned to a woman. In the church, I want us to consider the role of women, or roles, plural, and that we have some poor thinking sometimes, or that discount the ability and the need for women to be active. And I really want to pull that into consideration not necessarily today, but for you to think about it, that the sense that men are superior because of Adam and Eve and some of those things, when we can see decision-making that men are clearly not superior with some of their good thinking, causes us to be different. The women have been subjugated beyond what God intends, in my opinion, and not by God, but by men. Okay, and it should be considered or reconsidered what women can do based on the history of what God has approved of in the past, if these examples are real and true and are designated by God to bring about the Messiah, I don't know if women are as limited as we have made them in the New Testament. And I just ask that as a question of which I'm exploring on my own. And so the passages that limit women in worship, I get that. I have no issues. But in reality, you see, maybe we need to revisit what having authority means. Because none of us really have authority other than the authority God gives me. And I have no authority by position or title, even though there are responsibilities that are added. From elevation standpoint, there is none. Okay, and so is good thinking then that's different from yours? I ask this for all of us. Is good thinking that is different from yours, or maybe it's just thinking and you don't recognize it as good thinking as yet. If there's thinking that is different from yours, can you ignore it because of gender, age, or position of another person? I ask you that because one of the phrases that I remember as a boy is, out of the mouth of babes comes truth. And that we should be listening even to children. So I leave us with the idea that maybe we need to honor in a much greater way the roles of women in all that they do and in the church. And so I hope that you'll think about it. I have more for us to consider a little later on, but I do want us to consider it from this standpoint. And then, please, I would love to know how you think. Have you become a Christian? I would like to ask anyone that is considering becoming a Christian of when should you become a Christian? And I want to ask and even instruct, if I could, that as soon as you know that you should, do it. And for those of us that have, if we feel like that we have strayed after our discussion this morning in Bible class, if we have a need to fix something, do it today. And if we can help you in any way, won't you come as we stand and sing?